Good sir.
How are you today, sir?
Fine, thank you, sir.
Good, nice to hear your voice.
Yes, thank you. Thanks a lot, sir. And good afternoon to listeners everywhere. Yes, sir, you there?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you, sir. Yes, I would just like to say, the lady, Natalie, that all of us as humans are created equal. And, you know, everybody deserves a chance. And if that lady was to win that seat in the city, I think that a lot of Belgians will be glued to their TV to see how she will perform in her maiden speech in Parliament. You know? And, you know, it is always, you know, sometimes people might look at a person past, but in life, people have to bypass certain things. Because if that lady was to win the lotto now, or something, and open a business, nobody is not going to say, well, you was a three-yard lady, we are not working with you, or so, so. You know, she would get that respect, you know? And I find that lady, if she was to win, you see, she could only do her best, and she would not be in Parliament forever and ever and ever. It may be a one-off something, you know. So she deserves a chance, sir. That is my view.
So, sir, tell me, you're in the constituency of Bridgetown?
No, not really, you know.
And if you were in the constituency of Bridgetown, would you vote for her?
Well, to be honest with you, the way how life is, if I think I would give her a chance. To be honest with you, because I would give her a chance, you know, because right now, as far as the hype about the lady Natalie is concerned, people saying a lot of things. Nowadays, the problem is not Natalie, sir. You know what is the problem in our world today? It is these lot of guns and these lot of people that waking up in the morning and going and gunning down people without a reason.
So you are concerned. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I think the biggest, our problem today in the world, what we need to do is the people that in authority world leaders need to do is to close down all of these places that making all of these foolish guns that causing the problem. And that is the problem. That I don't think this Natalie is any problem. It is the way how the world is going today with this epidemic or all of this killing and all of this unnecessary shooting and all kind of thing every minute. That is what we need to get rid of in the world. Close down all of these places that making guns, the ones that out already, well, you can't do nothing about that.
Tell me, you made your point. Tell me
Thank
something.
Thank you very much.
No, don't go. I want to engage you on something. What are your concerns right now? You sound like an elderly gentleman.
Yes, well, I am. 65, sir. Going 66
65? That's
65,
not...
65, going 66 this year.
Yeah, that's old, man. But anyhow.
Yes, I know that you're the youngster. I'm old enough to be your dad, correct?
No, I am not too far from you, so that's why I said you're not all too old.
Yes,
anyhow, okay. I want you to stay on the line. I want to take a commercial break, and I want you to stay on the line. So don't go away. Okay.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, okay.
We're back with you, sir. Are you still there?
I am. Thank you very much.
Yes, and thank you very much for holding. What I want to do is engage you because clearly you're concerned about the violence and whatnot. But what I'm wondering about is, as an elderly person, senior citizen now.
Yes, sir.
What are your concerns about the future for Barbados?
Well, first thing, sir, let me say, I think that both political parties, both the B and the D, they have performed extremely well. I mean, I really can't find much fault in the B or any fault in the D. And our present Honorable Prime Minister, sometimes we can't be too hard on him. And I will tell you why. Because he then became the PM from the beginning. It is just through a very sad, unfortunate moment that he was flung in that position. And the gentleman is trying to do a good job, he and his party. And let me say, the former Prime Minister, Mr. going after the Honorable. He have done extremely well. So when I look at the two political parties, sir, I see that the two of them is running neck and neck. You know, it is like two red horses coming down the home stretch. And sometimes you might even got to separate them with the camera, some kind of camera, for the finished camera. But I see Barbados. I see a good hope for Barbados. Things might be a little bit rough now, but in a good time, but the country is going to be back on firm footing. Barbados is not going to sink. It's not going to happen. Not with the kind of people who is running the country. You know, that is my view, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. Well, thank you. We go to the next caller. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
No, I want to deal. An earlier caller spoke to you about the Iran. About China and the U.S., right?
Yes.
No, I want to deal with that. But before I move on to that, I want to make a comment from something I heard in the news from the Chamber of Commerce president.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking about borrowing money at cheaper interest rates or something like that abroad. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that in the news not long ago. Well, yeah. What I would like to hear from him is how an institution, in fact, the members of that institution are some of the biggest users of foreign exchange in Barbados. And I think it would be a wonderful thing to hear from these people how they can earn some of the foreign exchange that they will use. That's why I would like to hear from that, rather than borrowing, because when you have bank, you borrow. The country has a lot of debt already. When you borrow, whether it's lower interest rate or high, you have to earn foreign exchange to repay the foreign currency loans. All the loans denominated foreign currency. So I would more like to hear from him as to how they are, what they are doing and what they propose to do to help Barbados to earn foreign exchange, given that they're such big foreign currency users. That's my point. Anyhow, hello, are you there?
Yeah, I was going to respond to it, but I think I'll just let that pass out to the off stump and let you continue.
Anyhow, no, the first point I want to make is this. As far as I understand, Iran is no longer. I don't understand it. No longer using the U.S. dollars to pay for.
That is what the caller said that some time ago. That one day, the Ayatollah, he didn't specify which one, had suggested that you use gold bullion. As I said, well, I told him I hadn't heard it, so I can comment on it.
I cannot comment on the gold bullion, but I know they no longer. I'm sure China, put it this way, China is no longer using U.S. dollars to pay for oil from Iran. I'm sure you heard that in the news. However, what I want to say is I think you have to see the U.S. dollar. That's what it's with. The United States, every time the United States emerges as the superpower, it imposes on the world whatever it wants, right? Now, if you go back to the end of the Second World War, at the end of the Second World War, what happened? Europe was devastated.
You had the Marshall Plan. Yes.
Yeah, and what happened is, and the United States emerged as the sole superpower, dominant in international trade and also as politically. What it did, it imposed, first of all, they had the international conference at Bretton Woods, and it imposed the U.S. dollar. In fact, it established this international monetary system, the present one that we have, and it's at the World Bank and the IMF and so on. In 1944, the conference at Bretton Woods, right? And imposed the dollar. In fact, because the Lord James, who led the British delegation, he went to the conference hoping to have a neutral currency. But what the United States did was they imposed the U.S. dollar at that time on the world.
But I mean, look, come on. I made the point earlier about when you run things, when you're in charge, you do certain things. I mean, in the days of the Roman Empire, the Romans did that. I mean, you know, come on.
No, that's going to 1947. What they did, so they what I'm trying to say is they established an international monetary and trade system to suit them. In 1947, they established what you call the General Agreement on Tariff and Trade, GATT, as you know. Good. Mm-hmm. They're dominant.
The point you're getting to? Because you've made your point in terms of. Mm-hmm. These guys are continuing to try to dominate the world, but that's what you do if you have all the power. That's what you do.
So what the point I'm coming to?
You bully people as they've done throughout the world. You change governments. What they talk about regime change. You influence others heavily if you can. That is what big superpowers do. The British did it before.
What I'm saying to say, let me get on to what I'm coming. I'm coming up to show you that happened in that environment. The United States was dominant power in international trade at the time. And it's, let me come fast forward a little further and then get back to my point I'm trying to say. In around 1989 or so, remember the collapse of the Soviet Union? Remember they imposed perhaps one of the greatest frauds of the 20th century on the world, something called globalization? Free market globalization, remember that? The greatest fraud of the...
But
that?
You're talking about that's one of the greatest frauds.
Okay.
I want you to quickly make your point, okay? Because I'm going to come back to deal with that because you are trying to string a number of things together that really and truly don't add up, you know?
Listen, what I'm trying to tell you that the United States emerged as the superpower in 90 at the end of the Second World War. It emerged as the superpower after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and it imposed on the world what it wanted. That's the point I'm trying to make. That at first, in 1940, after the war, it imposed its international monetary and trade system on the world, and after 1989, the collapse of the Soviet Union, around that time, it imposed a trade system on the world again to suit itself and payment system with establishing what the free market globalization abroad. That's what I was trying to say. The point I'm trying to make to you is that we are in a different environment now. We see the emergence of China. The United States is no longer dominant in international trade. Get the figures and show the countries that China's role in international trade. The United States is no longer, and in fact, I would say this, sooner or later, you heard about something called the China Infrastructure Bank?
The what?
The China Infrastructure Bank.
Yes.
That the United States refused to join. Even Britain joined it. Because the United States obviously feared that. They are afraid that. Because, and I'll never tell you something further. The Asian countries for years have been trying to set their own own monetary system, you know. Mm-hmm. And they want to leave the IMF. Do you know? And the United States persuade them not to. Right? So what I'm saying is, the point I'm trying to make, we are living in a different world. The United States has declined. What you're saying
is that we're seeing a change that is going to take place. Because, I understood that you were trying to say all of this, right? Mm-hmm. But two things. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to make the point I made earlier again. Mm-hmm. The Romans did it. The British did it. The Americans are doing it. They've done it, and the Chinese are also trying to do it, and they've started to do it, where they're heavily influencing. Hold a second, no man. Let me make my point. The point I'm trying to make is this: when a country has economic dominance, and military dominance, and they try to subjugate other countries. That is how the world has developed. I'm not saying it's right, but that's how the world has developed.
I know, I'm not saying
okay?
No, all I'm telling
so
you.
So all that is happening now, we're witnessing the decline of American power.
And we're seeing
the rise in the Chinese. You've heard about the Silk Road, right? The Silk and Belt Road, which the Chinese are building right across Asia and whatnot. So the thing about and you know that what how the Chinese are really going into, they've gone into a number of impoverished African countries, they've gone into a number of Asian countries, and of course
Latin America and of course in the Caribbean.
What they're doing, they've clearly looked at history, looked at how other countries would have built their empires, and the Chinese are laying the platform to take over the world.
So
a lot of the things that we complain about with the Americans, a few years from now, you and I may not be around. People are going to be complaining about the Chinese.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, the Chinese, and they have everything to do it. First of all, they have the numbers, they have the skills, because they don't forget, they're the Chinese are very, very industrious people. And then, of course, in fact, they don't have to vet, they don't have to go through any Congress. Who then think can just make a decision to move people and they'll be moved. Whereas they have to take a thousand, they fight to get anything done in the U.S. Congress. So you'll see that China is going to move rapidly, as it's happening, mm-hmm. rapidly in almost everything.
Yeah.
That, faster than they're doing. So China is the country to watch. And I mean, I cannot see. Look, you know, every year you have the China Latin American Summit, mm-hmm. the China African Summit, maybe they have a China Caribbean Summit, and every, and Australia, and every, all of these countries. China is a lot of Chinese investment all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and you cannot stop them and unite. And the aid that they give, look, you have heard China gives African countries about $100 billion for disaster. Put aside that for African countries. Mm-hmm. United States could do that.
huh? All right, sir. But the point is that the Chinese are taking over and, you know.
Right. No, but it's going to become one of the most powerful countries in the world sooner or later. They have everything to do it.
Yeah. All right, sir. Thank you very much for your call. I read a question earlier where a person was asking about security guards actually searching people who are working at a FET. And this person is writing here, and the meaning of security guard is to protect person and property. A security officer has the power to search anyone who wants onto the property who he or she is being paid to ask to protect. A male security officer can search a male in its entirety, but he has to ask a female officer to remove the items from her handbag as he cannot remove them himself. Any further searching, a female security officer must take up that task. Security officers' operations are solely based on what his or her employer require them to do based on what the law says for private investigators and security guards act sets out. Fine, thank you very much for this information, and I noticed the where it's coming from, so you seem to know exactly what you're talking about. But what the person was more interested in is the fact that this was a case where workers were being searched after a FET, and they really feel that security guards did not have the right to do that. But I take your point here if you're saying that the security guards are there to protect and to protect the property and person of whoever's hired them. But I have never read the Private Investigator and Security Guards Act, so I really can't comment any further on it. But clearly, it is something that would be of concern if you have security guards actually searching people like that to see if they have money, or they've stolen money or something. Anyhow, we'll take a short break here and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We have a full slate of calls and we're going straight until 2 o'clock. We've cleared all our ads. So here we go. First caller, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Price.
Good afternoon to you.
Yeah, how are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
Well, it's all doing fine. Remember, I'm okay.
That's a positive way to look at things. I said that's a very positive way to look at things.
Right. Now, there are a number of things I want to touch on, but some of them are just a one sentence. America is scheduled to fall. It is anticipated, and it has been highlighted over some time. You know, they had great empires over the years, and they've all fallen, the Chaldeans, and come down. America is scheduled to fall. So much for that.
But before you go, if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
The America, 400 plus million people, right? The Chinese middle class is that number of people. That's just the middle income group, okay, in China. So is this a natural progression of things? That's how
natural progression
of things, you know. So that's just it. Anyhow, next one.
When China can boast just now 2 billion people, what are you saying? You understand?
And then you've got to watch India too, because India, as long as India can organize themselves, and they could also rise as well,
exactly.
Right? Because they're over a billion people, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Next thing.
All right. Now, There was a caller who was making a point to you about watch your conduct. But in the interim, that said caller was talking about, I don't know how that was allowed to come out. A minister comes on here and talk a lot of foolishness. You know that caller watch his conduct, right? You know. You remember?
I don't remember.
Something was said to you, watch your conduct.
Watch
you see, you have a hairballing throat, and somebody said you watch your conduct.
Yeah, well,
right. But that, sorry, you know, you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That same caller went on and said a minister of government comes and talk a lot of foolishness. Yeah.
But as I said, it's how he took what I said. He obviously put a different connotation to it than I certainly meant.
Right. That is not good. Indignance don't really go anywhere. No. I don't know. You are moderating. You listen to calling all the time. I have never spoken on this Natalie talk. I'm not going to intend to spend my good energy in that. But I'll just ask a simple and pertinent question. I said, what is really criteria to be an MP? You understand what I mean?
So as a voter. No, you know, you tell me, as a voter, what are you looking for in a representative?
A myriad of things. And to really go down.
You got 2 minutes. You got 2 minutes. Tell me. Tell the whole of Barbados.
You're looking for somebody that they've got, the capability is there. They're very competent. And then you
competent
you
in what? Competent in what?
Competent in their pursuit. Competent in what they dispense. You want? You don't want any kind of old thing. You want somebody that is capable.
They have expertise in some area.
Right. They've got the capacity to render in regard to certain pertinent things to the country.
Okay.
They've got to have that acumen and that capacity.
Okay, that's one. Mm-hmm.
Right. You want a person that they've got a good reputation and a good standing.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And then you can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. You know?
So what about the fact? What about having somebody who's actually done community work? You know, who has that experience? Who has a track record of showing that they actually care about people by actually having done things within a community?
That can be part of your criteria too.
Okay,
right. You understand? Uh-huh. And you can go on. You can find.
Satisfied that we're getting those types of people coming forward?
That's why I sort of veer off in the avenue of that's why I said what I was saying, you see? Because I would hate to think that the House of Assembly would reduce to any person as an incompetent person of disrepute or anything of the above. I would hate to think that it would condescend, that it would come to that when all the years you've had a certain caliber of person, and this is not being disparaging to anyone, but it is being realistic, though. So I would hate to think that we would be faced with a problem that you now virtually be scraping the barrel in this regard. I would hate to think that.
I see.
I don't know if it makes any sense to you with that. Mm-hmm. But there's hello.
Yeah.
Hello. But there's not my main thing. My main thing quickly. Mm. I commended you last week when you said that gentleman came on top of one constitutional crisis. There's another one yesterday. I was on hold, but I didn't manage to get because the program concluded. Mm-hmm. But listen, one gentleman yesterday talked about one dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Then what next? You get these sort of statements coming out and slangs coming out. And you were right on about what constitutional crisis?
There's no constitutional crisis going on. And I can tell you this thing about dictatorship. I have about 6 or 7 messages that I have read that I have here on the WhatsApp right now where people are talking about dictatorship and that sort of stuff.
They don't understand
but
what
the there's no constitutional crisis. The government is within the law for this 90-day extension. So there's no constitutional crisis. All right? Anyhow, sir, thank you for your call. Got to move on. You're on Brass Tacks. It's 1:30. Go
right
ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Moderator. How are you today, sir?
I am fine. And you?
I am disappointed, but I am still alive.
Why are you disappointed, sir?
I'm going to give you these 3 experiences I had today. Mm-hmm. And 3 beautiful-looking women. I don't know how to call them ladies, but I said women.
Mm-hmm.
my first experience is I came through the Warren roundabout heading towards Redmond's Village with a learner driver in the right lane, which is the correct lane. Mm-hmm. Here comes a Mercedes Jeep. I got the number, everything is recorded on my dash cam, because the dash cam pick up everything. As I was in the right lane, this person was in the lane next to me, which is the middle lane. I expected that person to go towards the university. Unfortunately, as we entered the roundabout and going around to head towards Redmond Village, the Jeep was next to me. So I put my head outside. I said, excuse me, you are in the wrong lane. Why are you doing that? The lady turned the corner straight up alongside of me, went down the window, put the hand outside and the middle finger up and down about 10 times at me and went on. When I get to Redmond Village, she pulled into the gas station. Unfortunately, or fortunately for me, I told the policeman what happened and he went to interview her. You know, I left there, came down to the bridge, turned left to come up Bang Hall. There's another student. And when I get to the lights that flashing red, I thought we continue to move slowly. Here comes the waterworks vehicle coming from Upper Bank Hall going towards Eagle Hall. Here comes a Jeep Vitara now. Woman flying coming through, and then she had to slam horn brakes and stop. I said, you're supposed to stop. She did the same thing, finger outside, and they tell me, F you. And there's two pretty looking women, you know. I ain't calling ladies now because they can't be ladies. Let me show you the last one. Going up here, please, though. Turn it to go by Marine House. And I saw this beautiful lady. I had a lady teaching to drive. And this lady came across the crossing. This woman looked like 300 carat gold. I said, oh, how beautiful. I said, you would make any money jump out of shirt. The woman cursed me. Let go along, shoot the net around, cursed me. I don't pay attention to this one. So woman are teaching to drive. I said, I did it again. He's lost the attention. I said, Lucy, thank you very much. Listen, I mean, woman looks so good. But you can't get in a compliment. So if he's something wrong, women got a serious problem. When he should have put that hand, that finger out there, that finger telling me something. They either want to be a man, and you hear what they tell me to do with it. I am serious. Women need to get real. And, oh, gosh, Mr. Thing, that asked that my whole day. You mean my pretty women, and my women in Barbados, the pretty, I say women out there. I'm not saying ladies, because a lady would never do that.
All right. I'm going to respond to you, and I know I'm going to mash some comments here, but I really need to respond to you.
But before you go any further, I have everything recorded. You know, my dad Sam got everything on it.
It's fine. So it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. I'm going to just give you my perspective, my one cent worth. So it ain't worth nothing because they don't even produce a 1 cent anymore.
I wonder if we man got them too. Go ahead.
I understand the whole thing about the driving thing. The first thing is that I really want to be the one where you pay the compliment to the woman, that in particular. All right, you know, you talk about sexual harassment.
Yeah, is that sexual harassment?
No, no.
You
cannot. You know, the funny thing is, Erskine, if somebody does not mind you making a statement like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, how nice they look and blah, blah, blah. It's not harassment. However, if somebody just wrote in here, that is sexual harassment. if you tell a woman certain things these days and they do not really want to hear it from you, or they don't appreciate the way you say it or they don't appreciate you, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
My suggestion to you, my friend,
is to look at them but
and say absolutely nothing.
okay. Let me tell you what happened, right? I only admire the handiworks of the Lord. I don't lust.
All right, Erskine, you have a great day. This is Brass Stats. Good afternoon. It's 1:35.
Yes, good afternoon, Miss Price.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
The tidbits I was there pondering about.
Yes.
It has to do basically with the trade union movement in Barbados.
Uh-huh.
As a collective body. Now, the trade union movement in Barbados and around the Caribbean regionally, you had emerged just after those riots, the 1930s.
Yes,
right. Out of the oppression from the British colonial government rule. Right, they rise up and to fight the oppression and fight for the rights of workers and the oppressed. And some leaders also sprung up. You had Bustamante in Jamaica, you had Urab Butler in Trinidad, you had Hugh Springer and Grantley Adams springing up as well. Now, what I want to say is there's some concerns I'm very greatly concerned with. I know you're talking about change today, and things change. You have different eras and different people at different junctures. Things will change, and all things being equal. But at the same time, things must be reasonable. What I'm talking about, to be more specific, is that after 2008 and to present, I don't recall the public officers in this country receiving any sort of salary increase in any shape, form, or fashion. And they were allowed to bear the brunt of a lot of austere medium-term fiscal policies. Some were even retrenched. You had retrenchment then the NCC, mm-hmm. and beautified barriers, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 6,000 or so who were sent home after 2013.
Yes, a mini structural internal adjustment, if you like, throwback from 1991 or what. Now, that was IMF prescribed. Now, back to public officers, and they bore the breadth of these having their feet literally put to the flames. Now, and through all of that, I must say that the former Minister of Finance, Mr. Wanafa, would have given them a salary to last, the ones that survived that are still in service, to survive the brunt of these austere measures, because if you look back at the amount of draconian taxes that we had an increase in VAT from 15% to 7.5%, and it went all the way up to 22% if you have a postpaid cell phone, and then you had the municipal tax, which was like a second tax bill on landowners. We also had the officers also have to bear a consolidated tax on their same set existing salaries. There's a tax that was done also on the allowances. Mm-hmm. And then the deductions that were allowed for income tax purposes were somewhere eliminated altogether or reduced significantly. Mm-hmm. Right? And right, and then you had a 2% foreign exchange fee if you have to send money overseas or abroad for children studying, and then you had the national social responsibility tax moving from 2%.
I think we all get your point.
I understand, you get the idea.
What does all of this have to do with the trade union?
Okay, and let's get back, distill it. I'm going to distill it into alcohol, not mushing though. And right, so all this adds up. So I'm just going through the whole
gamut of
taxes that these public officers had to bear, and they bore the brunt of it
with no salary increase.
There's no salary increase, but mm-hmm. the salary was sufficient to bear these austere measures that was given by the previous administration, Mr. Wanafa. Now, I'm back to my substantive point: trade unions, and trade unions were there to protect interest of collective body, collective bargaining, et cetera, these workers. And they happened on their watch. It's almost been something 8 years, 9 years. Well, it's a matter of semantics or a matter of academics. But it has been a significant period of drought for salary increases for public officers. And I'm saying it shouldn't happen. Because when workers put their trust and confidence, they pay fees. And that's a serious and significant point, because if workers have paid their fees and the unions have accepted, that is a contract. You've taken money from your members, their members, and they have a legitimate expectation to representations in all shapes, form, and fashion. And at no point in stage after 8 or 9 years, there has been any measure of success. And you couldn't get any monthly increase.
So are you saying that the trade union movement has failed the workers in the last several years?
Yes, they've failed. 9 years, they've failed. And it should be made, be called out for the pain and suffering to the workers, a breach of trust and confidence, okay, by the workers, and refund the workers part of the membership fee.
Mm.
Yeah, your membership juice. Mm-hmm. And because you failed them. So if they have a strike fund or some such, you should give the workers part of that and do like all of them. All of them. A lady it's here, ridiculous.
A lady here is saying, I'm in 100% agreement with this caller.
Right? Somebody has to be said. It needs to be said. You know? There's persons who may not be able to say it, so it needs to be said for them. And this matter speaks volume to nonsense. There's no good reason why the workers at the lower end should suffer and bear the brunt. You know, it's unfair to them, and it must be said. This regime saw a restitution order being made from the membership to their fellow workers. They have a social contract, collective bargain. They have a conscience, and they need to be reasonable and fair to their workers. Those great leaders before Bustamante, Uriah Butler in Trinidad, Miss Yarmouth, you springing up from Barbados.
Don't repeat because the time is getting away. I wanted to hear from you if you had, for a quick minute, if you had a solution apart from Benny or Jew. Yes. What is the solution to this?
Solution? Yeah, sure. It's very simple. The solution is this, that the unions are obligated to their members. And there should be sure a commitment. And where after a year there has been no improvement or success, the workers should call on them to resign or recall them and have fresh elections, or they should make a step down, because this is totally unacceptable. I've never seen this. I have not been alive that long, but for my short time here on this planet, and especially in Barbados. This is almost ridiculous, almost 10 years, almost a decade, and public officers subjected to harsh austere measures and not salary increase in health. Thank you very much. But
all right, so thank you very much for your call. I'll say, this board is lighting up from this call. One person is saying, Mr. Mann, the workers let down themselves. Another person here is saying, the union's sleeping now. No more marching up and down. They're waiting for a senator pick, whatever that means. And the other person here, the problem started, mentioning the part was a certain gentleman being in bed with the DLP government. Nothing was done for the workers. Another person here is saying, that is stupid. The union is its members. And that's what I'm saying. The caller is certainly not a trade union member and has not been for some time. I don't know how that person knows this. And this person here is saying, I'm a mother of three girls and I am a government worker. I have to support them. I have to have a car to support them too. I can't get them support and pay bills and buy groceries too. And when you get to get some easy buying things, you have to get them straight from overseas. To get things cheaper, you have to get them from overseas. They have to come straight from overseas. But now, government has put taxes on the foreign currency transactions. So when things get here, you're paying more for them at the port of entry. I can't survive in this state. Monthly, I'm crying how I'm going to get through the month. All right. Generate a number of calls. Anyway, we go to the next caller. You're on the air. It's 1:45. We finish in 15 minutes. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello, can I get on?
Yes, you're on. You're on live.
Oh.
Barbados is listening to you. Go right ahead.
I want to give support to the unions. You understand?
The trade union movement.
Yes.
Okay.
Because people forget. You can't make the government give you a raise. The union did what they had to do. So I want to support Akani McDonald and doing what he was doing. He was trying for the workers. And then even when he had the last strike, a lot of them didn't come out. And people have to remember that when you strike, you don't get paid. And the people started getting the money to put the salary. So I don't know what that man was saying, that the union failed. They failed. They tried the best, but you can't make the government do what they apparently can't do. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you very, very much. And this one person is writing, during the initial stages of this crisis, workers volunteered to to hold on their salaries in the interest of Barbados. This government has abused that goodwill. All right. We go to the next caller. This is Brastak. Good afternoon.
And a good day to you, sir.
Good day to you.
All right. Okay. I wanted to do two points, two different issues. Recently on the BBC, it was reported that the Belgium administration asked a Cuban ambassador to leave because he attended the launch of a new socialist party, Cuba Communist Socialist, and he attended the launching of a socialist party, and he was asked to leave. That I put out in recent, I am either BD or whatever. I just put out in a recent where someone claimed, asked the Canadian ambassador to step back. That's my local word term, my Caribbean term, step back, because she commented in her capacity as a woman, saying that Barbados is time for a female leader. See if you can balance those together. Huh? Okay. Now, the issue with Natalie, and I think it's someone named Lewis or whatever, and he places on her Facebook, being her campaign manager at the time, clearly with the, what's come across, he had no communication with her, and he's talking about PPP. What's the correct term? What's the prostitutes political party? Was that what it was? Help me there, please. whatever it was, it was something along those lines, correct?
Yeah, it's the PPP. Yeah.
And she quite rightly upbraided him. There's a BLP, Barbados Labour Party. Are there any parties that go whatever lawyer party or engineer party? Isn't she running as a citizen? I didn't realize she was running as a lawyer or a doctor or a prostitute or chief, was a banker, Indian chief, whatever. Was she running as a citizen? And he then tried to modify the statement saying that he was opening up to everyone. I said, but isn't she running as a citizen?
Yeah.
That's a yes or no. Isn't she running as a citizen?
She's running as a citizen. Let me just pull it in here. I want to really comment on this in the sense that I saw the video with Natalie Hayward, who made some very serious points. The fact about it is that what comes over to me is that she's extremely serious about her candidacy, and she is basically putting her former life behind her. And she's moving forward because she's very serious. And that was what she was appealing for. And I think that we can all identify with that.
That's correct.
And I sincerely hope that that she is allowed to move forward to do that. Yes.
Mr. Price, I hear what you're saying there. But ask me a question. When a lawyer offers himself, him or her, as a candidate, right? Do we recognize that they are a citizen, or do we ask them to move on from their legal legal profession, or is that irrelevant at that time?
Well, it's the thing about it is that, I mean, let's be realistic, eh? Her past would always come back to haunt her. Especially in politics, so by going out front, so what she has come out front and she has said, "This is what I used to do. I have stepped away from this. I see the need to come here to try to represent my people, Oh, and the name of the party is the Political Prostitutes Party. I didn't have the thing. PPP. It's Political Prostitutes Party. Someone just sent it here to me. So Natalie has come out and she said, look, this is what my past was. This is what my I want my future to be. And this is what I intend to do. Mm-hmm. And that is, and she has been working towards trying to achieve that. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, and I think that it is commendable that she is trying to do that, and we should try to support her as much as possible, and wish the best for her. This is Brass Tax. Good afternoon. You're on the air, sir. You're on the air, sir. All right, and you're off the air, sir.
Hello.
This is Brass Tax. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Right, Mr. Frank. Yes. I'm going to ask you something I think you are very familiar with. You remember the Rosa Parks incident?
Rosa Parks, yes.
Yeah. You remember
Mr. I remember reading about it,
South Africa?
If I remember, I didn't hear that last one, what?
Mr. Botha in South Africa.
Yes, Pick Botha, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things they used to do was the law. In America, how they treated Rosa Parks, she must stand up in the bus. You know, that was the law. But you know it was wrong.
It was morally wrong, yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't think the same thing happening in Barbados? It's the law, but what the Prime Minister is doing is wrong.
But it is the law, sir.
Pardon me?
At the end of the day, it's still the law.
Yeah, but it could and be you the cannot law, break the law. He's wrong.
All right.
That's what he's doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. You want to make any other comments you want to make? Okay, you got to go. All right. It's 1:53. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes.
Hi. I'm giving my condolences to the people of South Africa on behalf of the Mandela family. Winnie Mandela. You know, it's sad when I heard everybody has to pass, but, you know, mm-hmm. what she did, she wasn't perfect. But without her, I think people would have forgotten about Nelson Mandela.
Really? You think so? I don't think she defines Nelson Mandela at all.
She doesn't?
No.
She didn't leave.
His legacy stands on its own.
So that is good, but she led that fight. She never gave up. She led that fight. So I think that she should be.
She would be respected, as you said, for that period. But you know what makes what people remember most about Nelson Mandela? He spent 26, 27 years in prison for a cause that he believed in, and we, but the majority of black people believed that, you know, that apartheid was wrong.
But you know what and I feel? I think he would have spent more time there if she wasn't. She and her group wasn't pushing for it.
Well, the world was changing, you know, the world is changing as the things progress.
Mm-hmm.
You find that sometimes a system, it doesn't make any sense. And South Africa was losing more by having the apartheid system. It's like the slave trade. It just wasn't working anymore. It wasn't making any financial sense. It wasn't so. There was always an economic argument. There are some people who will come back at me and say, no, that ain't true. But there's always an economic basis for when these things are torn down, because sometimes it just does not make any sense. When you look at what you're losing, or rather what you have to gain if you put away that system from the way it was and go into a different system. But be that as it may, just very, very quickly, the main legacy of Nelson Mandela is the fact that he came out of prison, having gone through nearly 3 decades of being there, became president, and instead of what the natural human thing would have been to seek revenge, he sought reconciliation. He turned the other cheek, in biblical terms. And that is that's one of the things that has made him such an icon. Anyhow, we have another time to discuss that. Thank you very much for your call. It's 1:56, we take the last call. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're on the air. You're on the air. Go right ahead. You're on the air. I'm hearing noise. Okay. Let me just read these messages very quickly because this person is saying, Winnie was a great woman. She fought for her country. She will be seen as a hero of South Africa. This other person is saying, the local matter, PPP is more like XXX. This person is saying, if I'm your lawyer and I told you tomorrow we have a day in court and you show up, I'm sorry, people who really send these WhatsApp messages, please try to write them properly. Let me take this call. You're the last call, sir. Go right ahead. Oh, gee. What's my head there? Okay. Read this next message. We're having a little problem here with our telephones. Some try to compare apartheid with Barbados. And sir, I don't think you can compare what happened with the apartheid system in South Africa with Barbados. What we had in Barbados was, I mean, we had slavery. It's a small country. It was institutionalized at every level. People would have been exploited. And after slavery, because again of the smallness of the country where people can't really move around, there was a certain measure of control that the plantation owners would have continued to exert on the black population. And that was maintained for several years. And we saw that the riots in 1937 was like a culmination of all the frustrations of the people. But we've had tremendous development since then. And I think that the leadership of our country throughout the years has demonstrated, has certainly helped Barbados to develop. And, you know, if it's one good thing that we have had is that we've had on a consistent basis without any problems general elections. And by June, as the law provides, we will have general elections. And again, you, the public, will be able to decide on which group of people you want to lead you towards the future. And so let's look forward to that. And until the next time, have a great day.
It's 2 o'clock in Barbados and across these